good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Welcome to episode 3 of the Musical Weeb podcast. I'm your host, Rico, also known as the Musical Weeb. I appreciate everyone listening to the episodes thus far. Really means a lot to me. Like I said, this is kind of like the first thing I'm really kind of committing to try and be consistent with. No matter how tired I am or how much stuff I got going on, there will be an episode every Saturday. That is my goal and commitment for the year, to try and, you know, make a year's round doing this for an entire year. Starting off with what's in my rotation, starting off with music this time, I got my rotation, the new JID album just dropped, so that's pretty fresh in my rotation right now. I've only listened to it once all the way through, and the one full listen I did give it, it's really, really great. Probably top 5 hip-hop album for me this year so far. We'll see what else this year has in store, but as of right now, it's definitely in the top 5. And it's so refreshing to hear JID after, I think it's been like 5 years since DiCaprio 2 came out. If you like dope rhymes, fast flows, hard-hitting beats, and just great lyricism, I would highly recommend checking out JID's new album, The Forever Story. Standout track for me, it's probably the first real track, because the first track, Galaxy, is kind of like the intro, but the first real track, Radar, the way the beat switches, like it feels like 3 different times throughout the song, and the way it felt like he had like 6 different flows in one song, but it came off, you know, the transition between the flows and stuff came off so smooth. And the bars on that song, yeah, I'm still going back and catching stuff I didn't catch the first time around. That also gives the album a lot of replay value for me, is the fact that the lyricism is so clever and, you know, witty and stuff, that I keep finding new stuff every time I go back to the album. So highly, highly recommend checking out JID's The Forever Story. Also, it came out the same day, DJ Khaled's album. I don't even care about it. What's it called? I'm looking at Spotify right now. God Did. I mean, it's a DJ Khaled album. Like, man assembled like the whole fucking Avengers for this album. I hope he makes his money back, because he got some pretty big names on it. But I mean, it's a DJ Khaled album. He don't really make album music. He makes hot singles. Like, I think the only album that kind of had a decent run was it was the one album that came out during like his peak, when, you know, he was on Snapchat and everything. Major Key. That's what it is. Major Key. You know, that was like the last album that kind of had like a run, like from the first, I want to say 5 tracks, it was a really good run for Major Key. But God Did, I mean, it's DJ Khaled. I didn't really expect much. I listened to 2 songs off it, and that's mainly because the features interest me. The second song, God Did, with Rick Ross, Lil Wayne, Jay-Z, John Legend, and Friday. It's an 8-minute song, but damn, that song is actually really good. The beat is, you know, it's very lush, very, you know, big, bombastic. Rick Ross did his thing. Lil Wayne, he did really good. Not as crazy as other feature verses I've heard from Lil Wayne, but he did real good. He kind of used that auto-tune flow, but still, it was really dope. But the standout is Jay-Z. Man, Jay-Z's verse, yo, you want to talk about the entendre king? My God. Jay-Z's verse, like, it's just like how I was just talking about the JID album. You know, you can keep going back and you still find little nuggets that you didn't catch the first time. You know, And the fact this man's been doing it for since like the 90s is crazy. And the fact he don't write none of his verses. He says he writes it in his head, but he never writes anything down. So that track was really good. The other track I listened to was Uses Gospel Remix, which is a song off of Kanye's Donda album. But this one's a remix. It has Eminem on it. And I mean, it wasn't my favorite song off of Donda. And the Eminem verse went nothing crazy. So, like, it is an okay track. Like, nothing too special. Like I said, it wasn't my favorite song off of Donda. My favorite song off of Donda was Off the Grid. Like, Uses Gospel. I think I prefer the original one with Pusha T. Or not Pusha T. Who was on? Let me get my facts straight. Let me get my facts straight. Fact checking. Donda, Use This Gospel. Was it Donda? Oh no, it was on Jesus Is King. No wonder I forgot which album it came off of. I didn't bump Jesus Is King like that. And that one originally had Kenny G on it. But Kenny G, legendary saxophonist, big in the 80s. I'll say the track I was thinking of, or not the track, but it wasn't Pusha T. He actually got the clips on the original Use This Gospel. So I guess they just swapped out clips and put Eminem in it. But this remix is apparently produced by Dr. Dre, which I don't know what happened. I remember Kanye kept taking pictures with Dr. Dre saying Jesus Is King 2 coming out soon. If Jesus Is King 2 is coming out, I mean, he can keep it. I don't really care for Jesus Is King like that. Like, the only song I really liked was Follow God. Hands On was cool too. And Uses Gospel was cool too. But beyond that, I don't really mess with Jesus King like that. It's definitely in the lower half of Kanye's discography. Now, moving on to what's in my anime rotation. Still make my way through Hajime no Ippo, the boxing anime I referred to in the last episode. I think I'm like halfway through the first season now. Ippo just won the rookie tournament for the Eastern Japan Conference. And man, that one of the best tournament arcs I've seen in a while. Each fight, like each outside of like the last two, the last one was the best because it was really, really intense. Like, both the fighters' resolve was so strong that, you know, they were literally putting their bodies and, you know, careers on the line. Like, their corner man kept telling them, like, yo, if you keep going on, the damage you do, you might not be able to box again, or at the very least you might be out for like a long time. But both the resolves and the reason they were fighting or boxing to begin with was so strong that they didn't care. You know, I'm not quitting until, you know, I'm knocked out or, you know, I win. And everyone prior to the final fight, they were really good fights with a lot of different end techniques of boxing that came into play. You know, different, you know, like the first fight of the rookie tournament, he had to learn how to, you know, guard and dodge a right hook, which the guy that was fighting him, he was actually a black man, which at first I kind of gave the side eye and like, I don't know, because to be frank, Japanese, they could be a little racist sometimes. I'm not gonna hold you, they could be a little racist sometimes, but they actually did a really good job of not being overtly racist. I didn't detect any racism to begin with, and they actually, you know, gave the black man they props. They're like like one of the people that fights at Ippo's gym, he saw who Ippo was fighting, and he was, you know, black man, and a member of the U.S. Army on top of that. He's like, if you had to fight him, what do you think would happen? He's like, bro, I don't even think I'd be able to get through half my power, because that man will knock me on my ass. Because, and they even said most of the people that represent the boxing kingdom of the United States are people of color, are black. And you know, the two greatest, one of the two greatest, you know, people to ever pick up the sport of boxing are black, Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali. Which Ippo, his style is actually kind of, his style of boxing is pretty much modeled after Mike Tyson. They even showed it, because his guard in the first match was pretty weak. He could punch like no one's business, but he wasn't good at blocking or guarding punches. So the coach actually made him take up Mike Tyson's style of guarding, which is called the peekaboo method, which it's kind of like you bite into the thumbs. This is when you're training, of course. You bite into the thumbs of the glove and keep them at your face while, you know, not blocking your eyes. Well, it looks like you're peeking over your own fist. It's a real, you know, tight guard, kind of hard to break, especially, you know, if you're, you know, like Ippo, and you have a really strong, you know, punch, and like that gives you like a good reinforcement of arms. So like just stuff like that, like, makes Hajime no Ippo so good and interesting. The fact that you're actually kind of educational and teaching you these different methods and the, you know, the ins and outs of the sport of boxing. I think that's like one of the main reasons I keep coming back to it. Outside the fact that the story is actually really good and it has a lot of heart out of their characters and stuff. So about halfway through Hajime no Ippo now, this next guy that I guess is like his rival, Sendo, he's known as the Rocky of some city, but he made the distinction of like, when they say Rocky, I'm not talking about Rocky Balboa from the movie Rocky. I'm talking about Rocky Marciano, which, for those of you who are not familiar, I wasn't familiar till, you know, I started watching Hajime no Ippo. Rocky Marciano was, as far as I know, I mean, like I said, the show was made back in like 2000, so I don't know how true this is. He was the only heavyweight champion to retire without taking a single loss. He had like 47 fights, 47 wins with 43 knockouts. As far as I know, no one in the history of boxing has been able to replicate that. Because even when we talk about greats like Tyson and Ali, they took their losses. You know, they didn't retire undefeated. So, making my way through Hajime no Ippo, I'm loving it so far. Hopefully y'all took my advice and checked it out. If not, I understand. As far as what's in my rotation as far as video games go, nothing too much. Played a little bit Elden Ring. Been playing a little bit of Grand Theft Auto 5. Haven't really been playing that much video games this week. Mostly just been like, I keep gushing about it. I've been kind of making my way through Hajime no Ippo, so haven't really played that many games this week. Outside like a little bit of GTA, a little bit of Elden Ring. I did beat Persona 5 Strikers. last Sunday. Finally beat it. Really great. Really good ending. And what I liked about Persona 5 Strikers from regular Persona 5, Persona 5, they kind of made their villains be black and white. Like, oh, these people are, you know, evil. Their desires are distorted and stuff like that. What I liked about Strikers a lot, it actually kind of brought in, you know, the gray area, you know, like, this person's doing, you know, the wrong thing, but the reason why they're doing it, does it make them wholly evil? Like, it brings those kind of questions into play with their villains. And what came down to the final villain, they did the same thing with Persona 5. The, you have to fight God as like the last boss of the game. But the last boss of the game wants to steal everyone's hearts and desires to pretty much brainwash them to give them a perfect paradise. You know, eliminate the, you know, the concept of winners, losers, loss, grief, all that kind of stuff, and just put everyone like this happy, you know, docile, you know, state of mind. Which, like, I get the reason why, because, you know, they always say ignorance is bliss, but also at the same time, when you take someone's free will, you rob them of what kind of makes them an individual, what makes them human. You know, that's one of the our superpowers as humans, is our innate ability, whether we choose to act on it or not, is the ability to change and overcome. You know, you know, when you look back at our ancestors, where we started to where we got now, it's, we only got to where we are now is because of, you know, our perseverance as a species and our, you know, our ability, you know, to adapt and overcome, you know, obstacles in life. So Persona 5 Strikers did a really good job of kind of bringing home that ideal, and, you know, while addressing the nuances of that kind of mentality and that art and that debate. But beyond that, haven't really been playing that much gaming this week. Hopefully I can get more gaming in this coming week. We'll see. Not making any promises. But moving on, starting off with anime topics this time. This one's semi-anime, but it's anime adjacent. Let's just put it like that. The One Piece live-action Netflix show just finished filming. I like One Piece, but historically, live-action adaptations of anime have been bad, to put it mildly. They've been bad. We had the most infamous one probably being Dragon Ball Evolution. That was just terrible. It was just absolutely terrible. I would not recommend watching it, especially if you're a Dragon Ball fan. Like, that movie was just god awful. The fights were trash. The special effects were trash. The way they did Piccolo was trash. Like, everything about that movie was just trash. The most recent live action adaptation of an anime that comes to mind is the Cowboy Bebop one, which, okay, I might have an unpopular opinion, but the first, you know, part of the Cowboy Bebop live action, I was actually enjoying it. You know, I'm like, okay, they kind of get the aesthetic, you know. The music's A1. They got Yoko Kanno to come back to the music. So the music was, mwah, you know, it was A1. They kept the same opening because that also gave me kind of some hope. Because, like, okay, they realized they can't do a better opening than Tank, the original opening for the Cowboy Bebop anime. So they just put their own visuals to it. I'm like, okay. They're kind of understanding the assignment now. In the first episode, they kind of did a homage to the opening of the Cowboy Bebop movie, Knocking on Heaven's Door. So I'm like, okay, they kind of get it. They kind of get the assignment. But as it got closer to the end, I'm like, no, dog. You're stumbling. And then when it got to the final episode, they just fell flat on their face. I'm like, no. Like, the ending was bad. It was really bad. Like, the way they did it, and especially considering the scene it comes from in the original anime, they did it bad. I mean, whew. I was pissed when it happened. And then seeing where they were probably going to go for season two, I'm like, nah, this is going to be trash. Like, how can you do that? How can you do this Cowboy Bebop? Like, one of the best animes of all time, and you do this? Like, dog, you had one job. Like, I get you will take some artistic liberties, but stay true. Stay true to the original source material as you can. Because deviating from the source material too much, like, 9 times out of 10, that it won't work. Like, it don't work. And seeing where they were wanting to go to, yeah, I'm kind of glad it got canceled. I ain't gonna lie. Remember, boys and girls, stay hydrated. Moving on to the next topic of anime news. We're getting a new Psycho Pass movie. Psycho Pass, I remember watching the first season when it first came out. I believe it was like 2014-13. And if you like movies kind of like Blade Runner, or you like good, you know, detective psychological cyberpunk stories, definitely recommend checking out Psycho Pass. The premise of Psycho Pass being, you know, they live in a technological world where an AI system called the Sybil system actually, you know, monitors, you know, your mental health and your mental status to determine whether you are a threat to society or not. And the will of the AI, the Sybil system, is carried out by enforcers, which are pretty much police officers, and they're armed with these weapons called Dominators, which, when they point the gun at someone, it detects like their mental state. And if they're like in the blue, I believe, you know, they're fine, the gun won't even fire, do nothing. If they're in the yellow, the gun moves to like a stun mode, you know, stuns them, and, you know, they're taken to like therapy or whatever to get their emotional state, you know, back in order. And if they move to red, you know, it turns into a hand cannon. I mean, like, it, you know, like, it vaporizes them down to the atom type thing. And it was really good. And it kind of similar to Personified Strikers, it brings up those concepts of morality, it brings up those gray areas, because there are certain points where it's, you know, some of the people on the enforcer force, they're actually ex-criminals that, to get their, you know, get their sentence lowered or get parole, they became enforcers because the civil system deemed them, you can think like a criminal, so, you know, we're gonna put you in the red, but if you join the force to help us catch other criminals, you know, we'll let you live, you know, and what have you. But these people aren't bad people. Just because they can think like a criminal doesn't mean they have the capacity to actually act on it, you know. So it brings up that kind of moral dilemma. Just because you could think like something, does that necessarily mean you have the means or the gumption to act on these thoughts? So bringing up those questions of morality, that kind of what brings the charm of the show. I would recommend watching it. I definitely gotta catch up, because it's been years since I've watched it. And I only watched the first season. I didn't watch the second season. I forget why. I just never got around to watching it. And then they came out with another movie after the second season, so now they're on the second movie. So I'm probably gonna catch up, hopefully soon. I might put a pause on Hajime no Ippo to actually watch Psycho Pass again, because I remember really liking it. I'm a big fan of the whole cyberpunk genre and aesthetic. So definitely gonna check that out. Speaking of cyberpunk, Cyberpunk Edgerunners, the anime adaptation of Cyberpunk 2077, which is being adapted by Studio Trigger, the same studio behind Darling in the Franxx, Kill la Kill, Gurren Lagann. The release date is actually coming up pretty soon, September 13th. It's going to be 10 episodes following a group of edge runners in the city of Night City. Anyone close to me knows I love cyberpunk, so much so that I actually got into Cyberpunk's original source material. For those of you who do not know, Cyberpunk 2077 is actually based off an old tabletop RPG. Tabletop RPGs being games like Dungeons and Dragons, you know, where you make your character, you know, you get a character sheet, you have one person act as the game master, where they pretty much act as a narrator slash referee for a game. It's pretty much like playing pretend, but with rules and structure. And, you know, you craft your own stories, and, you know, the game master crafts, you know, these scenarios or these stories or these campaigns for the players, and the players interact with the story, and, you know, they can make whatever choices they want throughout the story. So that's kind of like the charm of those kind of games. Like, for example, I'm usually the game master, so I'm usually the storyteller's referee. I'm like, so to start a game, I'd be like, you enter a bar. You're in the Lower East Side of Night City. You're in the Haywood section of Night City, notoriously known for being run by the Valentino gang, a street gang mostly comprised of Hispanic people. They're not known to be violent. They're more of a gang to catch ladies instead of bodies. You enter the bar known as the Wild Coyote. You sit down, you order yourselves a round of tequila, but in the corner you see what seems like a brawl starting to erupt. But you see two distinct sides, one being the Valentinos and one being the Maelstrom gang. What do you want to do? And at that point, the players will tell me what they want to do. Oh, I want to go, you know, get the police or whatever. Then I'll describe them getting to, you know, getting the police and what transpires after. Or, you know, oh, I want to jump in. But okay, who do you want to fight with, or who do you want to fight? So it's things like that that kind of brings the appeal of those type of games. And I love those kind of games. I'm really big into it. So Cyberpunk 2077 was based off Cyberpunk 2020, which is the tabletop role-playing game. Cyberpunk 2077, even though the game, I mean, it came out in a really, really bad state, but they announced that they have an anime adaptation coming out, and the trailer is out right now, and it looks really, really good. You know, one of the things I love about Cyberpunk is just the rich world and lore behind Cyberpunk. You know, from the different Cyberpunk cybernetics that you can get, to the various different corporations that kind of are the overlords of the world, kind of like our world today, where corporations kind of rule everything, you know. So I'm very much looking forward to it. It's a nice, you know, cool 10 episodes. Hopefully this ain't a one and done, because I would love to get a season 2 of, you know, a Cyberpunk Edgerunners. Granted, if, you know, the ending, you know, there's room for it. Next in anime news. So anime and manga fans, they can be crazy. They can get crazy. So much so that if things don't go their way or something they don't like happens, they start burning their shit. The newest My Hero Academia chapter has people in quite a tiff. I won't spoil what happens. Let's just say, if you're a shonen fan, you can see this coming from a mile away. If you've been in the shonens and you've been around the block like I have, I saw it coming a mile away. Now, I don't get why people are so upset over the fact that it did happen. What I do somewhat understand is how what happened happened. Like the way it happened. I'm trying to skirt around, you know, not spoiling it, but to put it in perspective, like what the ultimate thing that happened, I saw it coming from a mile away, but the way they went about it, I'm like, okay, that's kind of bullshit. I ain't gonna lie, that's pretty dumb. And a lot of people are up in arms about it, so much so that I actually saw on Twitter that people like were burning their manga volumes and stuff like that. You know, like, how could you do this? This is stupid. This is such bull. I'm like, if anything's stupid, you're stupid. Because what do you... My thing is, like, what do you accomplish by doing that? Like, like, I'm sorry, but the author of My Hero ain't sweating it. You already gave him your money buying those volumes. You know, he already got your money. Like, he's not gonna lose any sleep over it. He's gonna keep continuing writing the manga. He's gonna keep continuing getting his checks. So it's like, you're the one that looks stupid. You literally burned away your hard-earned money. You know, because manga ain't cheap, y'all. Like, for a little manga volume book, it's like $10 a pop. So, and you know, these manga series, you know, they get up to, you know, 30 volumes, 40 volumes, you know. So like $10 a pop, you know, do the math, you know. You spend a lot of money and you're gonna burn that away just because something that didn't go your way happened. Even though, like, if you've been around the block, you would see it coming from a mile away. Like, I understand getting mad and, you know, kind of ranting on Twitter or whatever. When you start doing dumb stuff like that, like burning your merchandise or whatever that you spent your hard-earned money on, nah, you're the one that looks stupid. With my regards to the what happened in the My Hero chapter, again, I'm not gonna spoil it, but I will say I saw it coming, but I think the way they went about it was dumb. They could have played it in a better way. You know, if the circumstances of how it of what happened, I feel like it would have went down a lot easier. But the characters that are involved, like one of the characters that is involved, it's like, why him? You could have picked someone else to fill that gap. That would have been the more sensible choice, the more emotionally impactful choice. But you picked this guy. It, like, I don't understand the thought process of the author. But it's his manga at the end of the day. He can do whatever he wants. I think it's dumb, but I'm still gonna, you know, keep reading it because I'm already disinvested. I want to see it through to the end. Moving on to gaming news. Notice how I didn't say video game news. Gaming news. Stick around, see what I mean. PlayStation has found themselves in quite the hot water this week. They took up two slots of the three slots that I have for this gaming section. So the first slot being Sony increases the price of the PS5 for everyone else except the United States. So countries like Europe, Asia, Australia, Africa, the PS5 now costs more over there than does here in the US, which that is a sleazeball move. They're trying to hide behind the excuse of, oh, due to supply chain command and or demand and, you know, supply chain shortages and stuff like that, we have to increase the price in these territories, whatever. But I'm like, not once have I seen a console go up in price since its release, because the PlayStation 2 is going on to be like roughly almost 2 years old now at this point, and you increase the price. It should be the opposite. The price should decrease as the console gets older, or if not decrease, at least, you know, keep its appreciated value. You know, it shouldn't increase in price. And I live here in the US, so it doesn't really do, like, no skin off my back. I already got my PS5, but still, that's really foul for Sony to do that to all the other countries. I get the United States is one of the biggest, you know, gaming markets, but to do that to Asia too, which Asia is not that far behind us as far as, you know, gaming goes, you know, because the gaming scene in Asia, it's really big, you know. And if America's not careful, you know, Asia could take us over as far as, you know, the biggest market for gaming. Water break, y'all, water break. So I just think it's really foul for Sony to do that. You know, that's like me trying to sell you my iPad, which my iPad is like the 2021 iPad Air version. Like, oh yeah, fresh off the line, where'd you say you're from again? Oh, I'm from the UK. Oh yeah, so that'll be 600 instead of 500. What do you mean? You know, why'd you increase it for me? Like, oh well, the parts and prices to make it in your country have gone up, so I have to increase your prices. Like, that's not fair though. That's not fair. And to add insult to injury, PlayStation is being sued for $6 billion, count that, $6 billion, for reasons the suitors put it as they have a monopoly on the sale of digital games, which I'm gonna call it right now, they ain't winning this case. They're not gonna win it. One, you know, Sony is like a big, like one of the biggest business conglomerates. You know, they got money and lawyers to throw at you for days. You're not gonna win. Two, I read the suit. They don't really have that strong of a case. They argued that PlayStation has a monopoly on the sale of digital games, which they don't. You know, it might feel that way because, you know, when you ask the average person, you know, what do they use? More often than not, you're going to hear a PlayStation. But they don't have a monopoly. A monopoly dictates, you know, only one entity really holds, you know, the keys to a certain industry. The sale of digital games, Sony does not hold those keys. You know, there are multiple ways, you know, that you can buy your games digitally. You know, like, granted, on a PlayStation, you can only buy digital games through the PlayStation Store. But just like how on Apple, you can only buy, you know, apps through the Apple App Store. Same way, you know, if you have an Android, you can only really get apps through the Google Play Store. Same way, if you have an Xbox, you can only get stuff through the Xbox or the Microsoft Store. So there are multiple ways for you to get games. You know, if it was, you know, if you wanted to buy a digital game and you had to go through the PlayStation Store, no matter what platform or console you're using, then in that case, you have more of a case for saying it's a monopoly. But to say that PlayStation has a monopoly, no. If you want to go that their policies for the PlayStation Store are unfair, then yeah, you have more of a case there. Because looking at the PlayStation Store, some of these prices do not make sense. Like, tell me why Black Ops 3, which is I don't know how many years old at this point, they still have it on the PlayStation Store for like $64. Like, that game is how old at this point? That shit should be like $20 now at least. You know, so things like that, if you want to make a case against those, like the unfair pricing of games, then you have more of a case for that. But to say Sony has a monopoly, nah, your suit hat is, you know, it has paper skin and glass bones. Like, your case ain't gonna last. You're not gonna win. I mean, on that front, Sony's fine. On the PS5 prices front, for the other territories, man, they gotta fix that shit real quick. Or, you know, as a business, you don't want to alienate, you know, your other markets. Like, if you want to put more resources or emphasis into a market, that's fine. But when you start to alienate the other markets, that's a bad business move. Like if they really want to, like, put their focus into the U.S., they have it to where, you know, certain accessories or whatever for your PlayStation or, you know, certain things, you know, they come out in the U.S. first, and then, you know, they're released in the other regions at a later date. You know, stuff like that, that's fine. But when you start, you know, alienating the other regions based off prices, you know, like dog, you know, living ain't cheap right now. You know, I know everyone gotta make their money, but damn, you know, living ain't cheap right now. Inflation just isn't a problem here in the U.S. It's a problem everywhere. So for Sony to do that, that's pretty scummy. So hopefully Sony can get it together, because if they don't, I mean, they're going to be fine. They're still going to make money, you know, brand loyalty and all that. But PR is definitely going to take a hit, though. Next in gaming news, Dungeons & Dragons. Everyone that knows me IRL knows I love Dungeons & Dragons. As I kind of explained in when I was gushing about the Cyberpunk tabletop role-playing game, I also love Dungeons & Dragons. Recently popularized by Stranger Things, the company behind Dungeons & Dragons, Wizards of the Coast, they just announced the new edition, quote-unquote, of Dungeons & Dragons, which, for those of you who aren't familiar with tabletop role-playing games, unlike a video game where, you know, a company can, you know, just put out a file update and, you know, you update the game to update, you know, the balancing of, you know, certain things in the game, or, you know, fix some of the bugs or whatever. And the tabletop role-playing sphere, if you want to update a game, you have to put out a new edition of the game and new supplements and whatever that go along with that edition. So that's why, you know, you, when you look back, you'll see, you know, Dungeons and Dragons Basic, Dungeons and Dragons Advanced, Dungeons and Dragons Third Edition. You know, that's why you'll always see, if you get into this gaming space, you'll always see edition. That's because if you want to update the game rules or whatever, you have to put out a new edition of the game. But Wizards of the Coast announced that they're kind of doing away with the additions idea, and instead of, because this last edition of Dungeons and Dragons was known as 5th edition, so instead of calling this, you know Dungeons and Dragons 5.5 edition or Dungeons and Dragons 6th edition, they're kind of putting it all under one banner. From now here on out, it's just going to be known as Dungeons and Dragons. You know, no more Dungeons and Dragons, you know, 5th, 6th, whatever. It'll be all under one banner. They announced a lot of things. Probably some of the biggest highlights of the announcement were the three core main rule books. If you want to get into Dungeons and Dragons, is the Dungeon Master's Guide, which gives you all the the rules and whatever, and how to craft your own stories and campaigns if you plan on being Dungeon Master, the person that runs the game. The Player's Handbook, which if you just plan on being a player, that's what you're going to need. It walks you through how to create a character, walks you through the skills, and the statistics that you need, gives you the spells for, you know, certain classes of character, gives you the different races that you can play as, you know, so it gives you everything you need if you're just going to be a player. And they're going to update the Monster Manual, which if you're the Dungeon Master, you're going to need. Because the Monster Manual gives you a plethora of monsters you can pick from to put into your games, and it gives you the stat blocks, you know, the lore, and, you know, the backstory of some of these monsters. We are getting updates to those three core main rule books in 2024 to signify the start of 1D&D. And also, we're getting a companion virtual tabletop role-playing game. So like pretty much you can pretty much play D&D on your computer. You know, you can move, you know, little digital minis, you can craft your own maps or whatever, all on your computer. You can play online now, although I prefer the element of, you know, actually getting your friends together IRL, you know, getting around the table, actually rolling the dice yourself. I prefer that, but I understand the appeal of, you know, and the convenience of having it in a digital form. So that was another big announcement, and they showed some pre-alpha footage of it, and it looks damn good. It looks like a CPU killer, because I think they're using Unreal Engine 4 or whatever edition of Unreal Engine we're on. It looks really detailed and good, but damn, it looks like it'll put a strain on your CPU for whatever computer you use. They also did announce that every piece of 5th edition supplement, so like all the 5th edition adventures, the source books, you know, they will be backwards compatible with the new edition, which is good because I've spent a lot of money on these books. So to get confirmation, like, look, your money ain't going to waste, you know, it's still gonna be supported. I'm a happy camper at that point. Speaking of Dungeons and Dragons, I actually picked up the new Dungeons and Dragons book set, Spelljammers. This one is kind of like a source book slash adventure. So Spelljammers is an adventure source book, which Spelljammers is a setting set in space. So pretty much taking Dungeons and Dragons to space. But the way they did it this time is they kind of broke it up into three different little books. You have one that is the settings book, which gives you all, you know, the history, backstory, how to run a Spelljammers campaign. It gives you different models of, you know, ships that you can use to sail through the astral sea or pretty much through space. You have the Light of Xerxes, which is the adventure module as an introduction adventure into the Spelljammers world. And then you have which is pretty much like the Monster Manual for Spelljammers, which gives you, you know, different new monsters that are kind of like space themed. And on top of that, they give you new, like, I believe it was like 3 or 4 new races that you can play as in the Spelljammers campaign. I haven't read the adventure all the way through. I read the adventure source book detailing the lore, the backstory, you know, how to run a Spelljammers campaign. And it's real interesting. I've seen some critiques that, oh, it's kind of bare bones, this, that, and third. Whereas I like these books because it's not too restrictive. One of the appeals of Dungeons and Dragons and just tabletop role-playing games in general is it's your game. You know, it gives you structure rules, but they always say you have the final say. However you want to run the game is up to you. You know, so I'm one of those people, if you give me, you know, a frame to work around, I will fill in the pieces to make it my own. If it's really, you know, structured, you know, very, very detailed, it's like, well, where's the room for me to make it mine? You know, to make it my unique, you know, experience or campaign. So that's a critique I've been seeing, but that's not a critique for me. That's actually, you know, a bonus for me. If y'all are interested, you know, I might, you know, get a group of my friends and we might actually, you know, record us playing a game. You know, I might upload it here to the podcast. Let me know if y'all are interested in that. So Spelljammers, really enjoying it. Hopefully I can, you know, get a group of friends together to actually run the adventure. If and when that happens, I'll come back and let y'all know how it went. And D&D 1 is set to release in 2024, so we have that to look forward to. Moving on to music news, it was kind of a dry week as far as music news goes. I think the only thing that really caught my eye was this ongoing beef between rapper Benny the Butcher and rapper Freddie Gibbs. It all kind of stems from an interview Benny the Butcher did, and asking the interviewer pretty much asked him, like, so what's the status on, you know, a Freddie Gibbs and Benny the Butcher album. He's like, oh nah, that's never coming. Like, my collabing with Freddie Gibbs, it came and went, you know. Because I believe Freddie, prior to that interview, he tweeted out something like, people don't tour in the cities they got robbed in, because Benny the Butcher was set to play here in Houston on one of his tours, but then he came to Houston one day and he got robbed, he got shot in the foot. So when it came time for his tour, they took off Houston and I think he went to Austin instead. And Freddie Gibbs tweeted that out, and I guess Benny the Butcher felt some type of way about it. So now their working relationship is no more. And then Benny the Butcher did that interview, and Freddie, just being Freddie, you know, he petty clapped back, and it's just been kind of steadily growing and growing in terms of beef, kind of escalating to the fact that Freddie went to Buffalo, New York with his girl and he got jumped by like 15 people. Probably assuming, you know, they're affiliated with Benny the Butcher. And then I really saw this play out live. I was just scrolling through Twitter on my break, and I saw Benny the Butcher tweet out Freddie Gibbs' girlfriend, which his girlfriend is kind of like an OnlyFans girl / porn star. He tweeted out, tweeted her giving another man oral pleasure, to put it professionally. pretty much making fun of him for like, you're dating a porn star. Yeah, it's just funny because I saw it play out like in live action. Like, I'm on break at work, I'm, you know, scrolling through Twitter, and I'm like, whoa, like Benny, I didn't need this on my timeline. But and then Freddie Gibbs came back. It's like, one thing about Freddie Gibbs, he's funny, man. Like, he's like, I've been knowing my girl did porn before I got with her. And he said, he told Benny, you wish your girl was as bad as mine. I've seen your wife and she ain't it, dog. I'm like, ooh. And yesterday he on his Instagram, he put up a picture of a Benny the Butcher, and he said the barber coming, and it shows like Benny the Butcher's hairline. His hairline is like pushed all the way to the back. Pretty much making fun of him, because one of Benny the Butcher's taglines is like, the butcher is coming. And Freddie put that picture, I was like, the barber is coming. I mean, look, as funny as these antics are, like, come on, let's just keep it to rap. Keep it on wax, you know, just make diss tracks, you know, just don't let it escalate to, you know, where one person gets killed or, you know, whatever. Just keep it to a rap, or, you know, hopefully they can, you know, reconcile their differences, you know, their problems with each other, because they did make a great, you know, rap duo. And it's kind of sad that we'll never get that collab album, because the collaborations they did do with each other, they were phenomenal. So hopefully, you know, hopefully everything works out, and hopefully, you know, no one, you know, gets killed or hurt any further. But that will pretty much wrap up episode 3 of the Musical Week podcast. Shorter than last week's episode, but hopefully y'all still enjoyed this episode, and I'll catch you on the next one. Peace.